The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Jerry's here, too. Dave's here in spirit. Let's get going.
Big thanks to Stell Simonton. Great name. One of the great HowStuffWorks.com writers. Mm-hmm. And I am really thrilled with this one because I had always known about and heard the term and fully understood what Rube Goldberg meant. A Rube Goldberg machine is something that is really complex and kind of awesome, and it's usually some kind of crazy contraption that ends up doing something very, very simply in a way that's far too complicated than it needs to be.
Right.
And I know that because it's a very common term. It's been around since, in the dictionary actually, since 1931. But I never, until like yesterday, knew that Rube Goldberg was like a dude and he was a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. And that's where it came from. He drew cartoons about these machines. It was very popular for it.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I knew that already, and I'm not sure
why. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I think one of the things, my first introduction to Rube Goldberg was that game Mousetrap. Remember that?
Of course, I have one, and we have one in Ruby's room.
Okay, there you go. So that was directly lifted in some ways from Rube Goldberg cartoons, and that must have been where the springboard for me, that landed me in a bathtub that went down a pole and dropped me off in a fountain of molasses.
Yeah, he had a Mousetrap cartoon. It wasn't what they did in the game, but clearly inspired by that kind of thing. He did like 50,000 cartoons. When I look at his stuff, I'm sure you looked at a ton of these cartoons. Mm-hmm. I really like the actual contraption stuff. Not so much the others, but it was not unlike R. Crumb in style.
Yeah, for sure.
And I went and looked it up, and apparently Rube Goldberg is one of quite a few artists that inspired R. Crumb, so it made sense.
Oh, okay. Good catch, man.
Yeah, it's sort of R. Crummy.
One of the other little interesting tidbits about Rube Goldberg to get started is his name is the only name listed as an adjective in Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Yeah.
And there are other names listed, but they're altered, like Machiavellian. This
right.
is just Rube Goldberg as an adjective to describe something that is unnecessarily complicated.
Well, your name is the only name that is in the dictionary as a verb.
That's true.
Got to Clark somebody something.
Clark me that Mousetrap board game.
Amazing. I didn't even think about that. You and Rube Goldberg.
Yep. Pals forever.
All right. So Rube Goldberg was born Reuben Garrett Lucius Goldberg.
Kincaid.
Great name. Born on the 4th of July in 1883 in San Francisco, and this all makes sense. He was an engineer. He went to school at Cal Berkeley and got an engineering degree. So, you know, it sort of makes sense that all these sort of contraptions he drew in these cartoons came from an engineer's brain.
Yeah, I guess he was a cartoonist at heart. At the very least, his granddaughter, who wrote a book about him, her name was Jennifer, or is Jennifer George. Her book is The Art of Rube Goldberg. And she said that what he cared most about was if he made you laugh. And there's not that much room to do that in as a mining engineer.
Right.
So he spent about 6 months after he got his degree, he graduated, he spent 6 months mapping water and sewer lines, and he said, this is not the job for me. And he quit. It was a pretty well-paying job, and decamped to New York, where he took a much lower-paying job at the New York Evening Mail as a cartoonist, because that's what he wanted to do. So he decided to do it. He was that kind of guy.
You know what else he did that kind of knocked me out?
What?
In the book, his granddaughter talked about the fact that he was a writer, he was a sculptor later in life, but he wrote a Three Stooges movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Before they were well known.
Back when they were
Ted Healy and his Stooges.
Right. It was pre, I'm going to say the wrong Stooge. I can't remember.
Pre-Curly? Pre-Shemp?
Might have been pre-Curly. I don't know.
The original three was Curly, Moe, and Larry.
Okay, I think it was?
Mm-hmm.
Now
and then
confused.
Shemp came after Curly. And then you had Curly, Joe, and then you had Joe Besser. And then you had, like, the Harlem Globetrotters and Scooby-Doo right. for some reason.
Dare we do one on the Three Stooges at some point? That'd be fun.
Definitely.
Anyway, he wrote the Three Stooges movie, Soup to Nuts, but ended up, like you said, being a cartoonist and first got his fame drawing a cartoon that was of the time. It's not so funny now, but they were called Foolish Questions. Mm-hmm. I did close to 500 of these, and one example was it would be a guy that had just fallen from a tall building on the ground, and a lady comes up and says, "Are you hurt?" And he says, "No, I'm taking my beauty sleep." So does it translate as like the funniest thing these days, but
it really doesn't.
Just gangbusters in the early 1900s, of
yeah,
course.
That was one thing he had a knack for, was creating national fads. So people from around the country sent in suggestions for Foolish Questions, and he wrote, I think he drew 500 of them. Did you say there were 450?
Yeah, close to it.
So that was just a kind of like a trait of his career. He was a nationally syndicated cartoonist almost out of the gate. And so when he came up with a new idea, it usually just for some reason struck a nerve and America just went bonkers for it.
Yeah. That's a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. I think it's a good place for a break. I don't know if we're hanging on to any cliff here.
All right. We'll be right back to reveal who the murderer is right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, in addition to Foolish Questions, he had a whole plethora of other kind of cartoon inventions, not the cartoons about inventions, like cartoon characters and strips that he invented is what I mean. So there's the I'm the Guy, which started another national trend. It would be like I'm the Guy Who Put the Hobo in Hoboken.
Mm-hmm.
People love that. I guess it was kind of like the original You Might Be a Redneck If or Here's Your Sign or something like that.
Yeah. That I saw Foxworthy recently, by the way, in an airport.
Oh.
Continue.
Was he doing like a performance or was he just walking around?
No. Yeah, he was performing in an airport. He had a guitar case up and there was a bunch of change in there.
Did you say hi?
No. I just was like, oh.
You didn't give him like a low five as you passed him?
No.
Okay.
I should have. Sorry.
So there was the I'm the Guy. Another very famous character was Boob McNutt. I read some of the Boob McNutt strips, and I mean, they are involved, not funny, Even like, even if you just kind of take away like the fact that like 100-something years have passed, mm-hmm. it's just not that funny. But they're still cute and adorable and very well drawn.
Yeah. That's I love the art.
Yeah, for sure.
So he eventually, in 1912 is when he started these, Rube Goldberg invention drawings. Mm-hmm. And these really, really took off. There was one that, was used in the How Stuff Works article as an example. That's pretty fun, called the Simple Mosquito Exterminator. No home should be without it. And I'm just going to read it real quick from Rube Goldberg's own, writing. The mosquito enters a window at A and walks along board, which is strewn with small chunks of rare steak. After munching steak as he walks, he is overcome by fumes coming from sponge B, which is soaked in chloroform, and falls on platform C when he regains consciousness. He looks through the telescope D and spies reflection of bald head E. And there's a guy laying on the bed, mm-hmm. bald head. In mirror, he mistakes this for the real thing, jumps off springboard C through D, and dashes his brains, I guess we would say bashes these days, out against the mirror, falling lifeless in can F.
Yeah, and the reason you kept going through parts of the alphabet reading that is because these invention cartoons were like schematics. So like each part was labeled with the letter, and then mm-hmm. the corresponding explanation would say, you know, A and B and all that. So that just kind of made it even cooler. And I think, you know, obviously he had a bit of the spirit of an engineer still, although the spirit of the cartoon like really overwhelmed and throttled and ended up strangling the spirit of the engineer.
Yeah, I love this stuff. I looked at these cartoons all morning. I really, really like them.
That's awesome. There's another character that he made that I read was probably his most famous, at least as far as characters went, Professor mm-hmm. Lucifer Gorgonzola Butts.
And Butts, Professor McNuts, boobs.
Right, exactly. Professor Butts was based on two different professors that that Goldberg had in college at the mining school. Mm-hmm. One was Samuel B. Christie. He was the dean of the mining school. Another was Frederick Slate. He was the head of the physics department. And he found them both painfully boring and dry. Apparently, Samuel B. Christie's favorite thing was to explain what degree you should push a wheelbarrow uphill at for maximum efficiency. He was that kind uh-huh. of guy.
Yeah.
And so he kind of put these two together and created Professor Lucifer Gorgonzola Butts. But from his experience with these guys, with Slate in particular, mm-hmm. a kind of like esoteric joke came along that I'm not sure whether he was aware of or not, but he mentions something. I think he wrote an essay that was published, something called the Barodic, B-A-R-O-D-I-K, which he described as this incredibly convoluted machine that filled an entire laboratory that was meant to measure the mass of the Earth, the weight of the Earth, I think is the way he put it.
Yeah.
And his explanation were like the only account of this machine. And some people got kind of obsessed trying to find like other documentation of this machine. And as this one guy, he wrote an article in the UC, where was he from? Irvine?
Berkeley. San Francisco.
No, he's
who,
from
Goldberg?
UC. Yeah.
Oh, the college.
He was an alum, right?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
UC Berkeley. Anyway, this guy wrote an article called Cracked Slate in the UC Berkeley, I guess, Blue and Gold publication. I'm not sure. And he talks about like trying to find documentation, and he realizes like this is a figment generally of Goldberg's imagination. There was a machine that had a name similar to that, but it was just a barometer. But he took it and created this huge, basically enormous, convoluted machine in his imagination, and it inadvertently or advertently left a historical joke kind of as a time bomb for somebody to come along and get obsessed with.
Now, was that Goldberg or Slate?
So Slate supposedly had that machine in his lab. Goldberg was the one who described it, and his essay was the only documentation of it for a while.
Okay, I get it now.
Yep.
Well, it is interesting that, you know, it's funny to think about these cartoons are just fun and all that stuff, but people have pointed out over the years that, like, you know, these are really commentaries that are more relevant now than they even were back then, which is this idea that machines many times can come along and mess things up. Technology can mess things up. Like we can take very simple, elegant processes and make them far more complicated than they need to be because of technology. And I think Goldberg was probably poking around at that idea himself, don't you?
Yeah, oh, definitely, for sure. Well, he was also a conservative, and he viewed like an increasingly large and cumbersome federal government that grew up under FDR as like an example of one of his Goldberg machines, an unnecessarily complicated machine for carrying out a relatively simple task.
Oh.
Yeah. He was also a political cartoonist, too. He won a Pulitzer, at least for one, or Pulitzer. And he also received some death threats for some of them because they didn't always sit well with Americans. And he became so concerned with it, he had his family's name changed. So the reason his granddaughter's name is Jennifer George is because his son Thomas changed his name to Thomas George, and his other son George followed in Thomas's footsteps and took the name George George, and Jennifer is the daughter of one of them.
Yeah, he was Jewish, and he would comment a lot in his cartoons on fascism and what's going on, and like you said, didn't sit well with a lot of people. And we should point out the one he won the Pulitzer was a cartoon in 1947 that had a little house balanced on a nuclear missile, balanced on a precipice, and it just said peace today. Obviously a very shaky thing, and he won a Pulitzer for that, which is great.
Yeah, and then one last thing. Apparently Mousetrap the Game actually did lift some components of some of his drawings directly from his cartoons. And refused to pay him any royalties for them.
What?
Yeah, Marvin Glass was to blame for that.
Boo.
So there you go. Chuck booed Marvin Glass, which of course means that Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.